Hello, happy holidays and merry festive times to one and all. Just a quick one to say thank you very much for listening to the show this year. It's been a fun one. We are doing a predictions show to finish off the year. I do have to say nothing in this episode is financial advice in any way, just for fun and educational purposes. But I appreciate your support. It's going to be a fun year next year. I think things are going to get pretty spicy. So looking forward to that. But enjoy the holidays. Happy New Year. And let's get into the show. Okay, here we are. 24 predictions for 2024, which is immediately a terrible idea because there's no way that we're going to get all of these right. But statistically, we might get a couple right. So then we'll just post about those ones and forget the rest. No, it should be interesting. Robin is back. And before we start, I've got a prediction to make. There is a blue bag in front of you for anyone watching. Please open the blue bag and have a look at what's inside.
I have a blue bag. I'm gonna make all sort of crisp packety noises. I feel like we're on a terrible radio show. It's like, what's in the box?
Yeah, it's like the worst feature ever.
Well, can you guess what's in this box today? It sounds like Christmas.
Yeah, it's been there for a while, I think. Well, yeah, I'm wearing a festive shirt. Listeners, it's got gingerbread men on and Christmas trees on. It's the kind of thing that you would judge immediately if you saw someone walking down the street, and you'd be correct to do it. There should be something in the bag, though, bigger.
This is extraordinary. It's a festive Minecraft jumper. I mean, it doesn't get more fly than that.
Looking good, feeling good. Well done again on the world record.
Looking good, feeling good, and all hyped and pumped for this list of in no way at all improbable things. I mean, what happens if we wake up on the 1st of January and it's 2025? The simulation has just skipped a year just to mock us.
Yeah, well then none of these predictions would have come true because we'd have skipped an entire year. But let's get into this then. 24 predictions for 2024, which regardless of what happens is not going to be a quiet, boring year with no news, I would imagine. I've split these predictions up into three categories. We've got a lot to get through, so we're going to spend 2 minutes on each. This is going to be a rapid moving episode. I've got a sort of emerging tech section, I've got a crypto section, and I've got an AI section. They all kind of cross over it in many ways because they're all sort of related, part of the same future. We should start. And again, 2 minutes is going to be quick. There's been a lot of talk previously about the Apple Vision Pro, but we are going to see it next year. Rumors in January that it is going to come out, and perhaps a more affordable version will also drop as well. How do you think this is going to go? Is it going to be well received? Is this the rise of spatial computing? Probably yes.
Yes, it is. I keep a close eye on things like nerfs, Gaussian splatting, these kind of things. There's always been this idea that 3D is very complicated and difficult to put together, and it's not really for the common human being. But over the course of the last 6 months, I think we've seen that's going away, and that easy to create, rapidly deployed 3D is coming fast. And the tools to kind of hook it all together will be probably baked into the Vision Pro. And then whatever the consumer model is after that. I think more so than the headset, just the idea of a flexible and lightweight 3D universe, big time. Yeah.
It feels like very much the beginning, doesn't it? They will do it properly. And yeah, regardless of whether you buy that specific headset or not, which is obviously pricey, we're going to see that type of content start to go around. It's going to blow lots of our minds as we see a whole new sort of media category really come to life, which has been around for a while. But yeah, almost certainly, it's going to make a splash. And it looks like January is going to be when it comes out, which is very cool. All right, we are just under our two-minute warning for Apple Vision Pro. Next, did you know that rollable phones are coming next year? Didn't know this. Did some research. We've seen flip phones with screens that have kind of rebirthed the nostalgia of the olden days, except that the actual screen flips in half and can open, which is pretty cool. That's nothing new. But we are going to have the birth of a new smartphone category with the introduction of the first rollable phones for mass market. Vivo and Transition apparently are gearing up to launch the world's first rollable phone model. So that'd be kind of interesting. Don't know. It sounds a little bit gimmicky, but I have seen it with TV screens. I've seen them being displayed. Maybe we're moving towards a world where, yeah, we move away from flat screens. I don't know how beneficial rolling up a phone is. That seems kind of gimmicky to me, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I guess it's about increasing the surface area in the most lightweight possible way. You want a bigger screen like a tablet, pull it out. But if you don't need that, it just needs to be a phone, fold it in. I've seen patents for Apple foldable phone, rollable screens and Samsung. There's no doubt that they're trying to squeeze the last life dregs out of the smartphone category before it all goes away at some point in the next 5 years. So, I mean, why not? Why not? I mean, tech, when you're required to pay that much for it, because let's be honest, smartphones are not cheap, it should have a thing that you can flex and delight in and enjoy, because the category otherwise is kind of stalled. That's my feeling.
It's a good point. I think it does feel like, sort of cool as that is, and there's lots of amazing technology in there, no doubt, but it's sort of scraping it probably the end of the sort of smartphone era. It's not going to go away overnight or immediately, but not a coincidence perhaps that the Vision Pro is coming and we're seeing these sort of differences in phones. I don't know what else we can really do there, but it's going to be interesting. Apple foldable iPad apparently is also coming as well. Kind of interesting. All right, next. We're ahead of time. This is just going very well so far. More GTA 6 trailers, obviously. That video, the trailer that came out last week, broke the record for the fastest watched video, or the most views in 24 hours outside of a music video. And it's not a surprise. It's not a prediction that anyone would probably argue against. Obviously, the game isn't coming out until 2025, but it is going to be, no doubt, one of the biggest cultural moments of the decade, if not last, 25 years, especially in entertainment industry. And I think it marks a point when the game does drop eventually, sort of solidifying gaming as the completely dominant entertainment culture. That is going to mark a moment where that really comes together, and it's going to be everywhere. All the mainstream are going to kind of realize that this is where time is being spent and attention is being spent primarily. The other categories will obviously still exist. But yeah, I think all of that will build through 2024. No doubt they're going to drop more stuff as we go. And yeah, it's going to be a landmark moment. It'll be interesting. All the AI NPC stuff probably going to be in there as well. We could talk about it forever. But yeah, it does feel like a sort of North Star that's going to push the video game market in a pretty crazy direction, even over 2024 before the game releases. Anything to add?
Ah, it's rubbish. Nobody plays video games. No one cares about GTA 6. What is it? It's this cultured ute doing violent stuff to each other. You are not wrong. GTA 6, yikes. What was it? 10 years in the making, $2 billion invested in it. And it still isn't out yet. It got a lot of flack, actually, that trailer, because it looked like crap.
Do you think?
Compared to what we have seen from games over the last couple of years in terms of just pure aesthetic performance, it didn't really cut the mustard. And there was speculation that what we were watching was not a trailer per se, as in, a rendered cinematic, but it was actually gameplay. Be interesting to see if that's the case. I don't know if you've noticed, but games are now phenomenally beautiful. I mean, just incredible on desktop machines. So that's pretty interesting. And the point that you made about gaming culture becoming the preeminent pop culture, self-expression, the way we consume culture, it's happening, man. It is so happening. I feel it in my bones, and I have done for like a year and a half already, which is why we've invested so much time in using game engines to produce work and then turning me into a video game character. It's happening. And it's happening in real time in front of us. Like with Fortnite Lego, Fortnite Festival, suddenly an explosion of kind of new eyeballs and new players coming to that platform and telling stories in that way. Netflix is investing a huge amount in video games. And you have to wonder, like, what's the plan there? Do they have a game experience? Is something like Black Mirror going to be a game as well as a transmedia experience, as well as a TV show? Yeah, 100%.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I think all of that's true. I think it's a combination of just the culture shifting, but also the generation growing up with it, getting older as well and getting further on in their career, and that's how they spend their time. There's a lot of stuff that's all coming together at the same time. But that is what's happening. And also gaming is such a broad category. Like casual games make up almost 50% of the market, people playing things like Candy Crush and other things like that on your phone. Mobile gaming is about $100 billion market now as well. So it's a huge category that's very varied, obviously, but it just is.
And it's not slowing down. That's the thing. It's not slowing down. It's actually increasing. We were looking at content creators across gaming and thinking it's heavily saturated. There's no space for a new voice or a new player and all that. No. Quite the opposite. As it expands, it creates more niches, it creates more subcultures, it creates more surface area for those to pop up and occupy one of those. And it feels like there's so much more room to grow. I'm just looking at this Netflix earnings report from 2019, and they say we compete with and lose to Fortnite more than HBO. It just shows you a little bit of like where the numbers are pointing for the streamers. And you think of like, how we consume entertainment, like it's all changed.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. I think any legacy media that's comparing, TV to streaming or whatever, it's like the conversation's too old. It's too old. You're comparing it to gaming now. That's where the attention is. Next prediction on that trail of thought is that Roblox will hit 100 million daily active users. And I don't think that's a particularly mind-blowing prediction. They hit 70 million recently. Equally, that's not slowing down. And really interesting thing that we talked about in last week's episode with Stephen, who runs a Metaverse Markham Roblox consultancy business, which was really interesting. But also that they are going to introduce clicking out e-commerce links into Roblox. So there's obviously a huge digital economy within there, but introducing e-commerce and potentially physical purchases out of Roblox experiences when they've got that many people in every day, I think will be maybe not immediately, but will be a big deal. And yeah, brands are going to be looking at that, thinking they can drive a lot of traffic through those games to actually click out and maybe buy physical products. We'll see if that plays out, but pretty interesting.
Oh, it will. The pushback on that is that the average age of a Roblox user is not of a, the purchasing power of those users is not significant. But I think that kind of reduces the brand awareness impact. I remember bringing this up with someone and they said, well, yeah, but I used to play Gran Turismo and I fell in love with American muscle cars during that time. And I couldn't afford one right then. But like, you know, that affinity with car marks in those contexts, you do fall in love with, you know, Japanese streetcars or BMWs, whatever it might be. And then there comes a point where that brand loyalty translates. I think that's difficult when it's cars, but when it's clothing or things like that, or more consumer brands, I don't think it's that far-fetched. I don't think it is at all. So I think there's definitely going to be an influx of more ad spend, more brand power into the ecosystem, driving eyeballs, driving attention, and Roblox is surely set. I'm just looking at Minecraft online players right now, 1 million active players, the last 30 days, 166 million. That's just Minecraft. Roblox is going to crap all over that.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? And they've got billboards and portals advertising in there as well. So even just from a marketing point of view, it's that is where, if I was building a marketing business, not that I'm in that world at all, but that is where I'd be looking to get into for sure. All right, next random sort of emerging tech prediction. We'll see Neuralink in a human. They've had the FDA approval, right, for some studies. So that is beginning to happen. It seems likely that we'll see something come out of that. That's going to be a pretty landmark moment with Elon Musk and Neuralink. I don't know how long that'll take, but if it's not 2024, it'll be 2025, I'd have thought. So yeah, that's going to get pretty interesting. We'll see.
Have you seen that guy, Brian Johnson?
The guy who's trying to stay young.
He's trying to de-age himself.
Yeah, it's completely wild, isn't it? Like, I don't know how, I mean, he's got all these sort of so-called results about how old his body is and stuff, but I don't know. I don't know how you really prove that.
But at what cost? At what cost? I mean, he looks so unhealthy and so fucking weird. He just looks weird. And he's spending like $2 million a year to just be a live science experiment of pure weirdness. I don't think he looks good. Maybe he feels good. Maybe that's worth it. I don't know. But this idea of transcending the limits of the human body through technology is definitely going to be it's going to become more of a concern. And we'll get onto the AI stuff next year. But I do feel that a kind of impending feeling of insecurity around AI and the need to upgrade ourselves is going to become a dominant theme in the next 10 years, transhumanism, all that stuff. I find it fascinating. I really do.
Yeah, it's kind of, I'm interested that he's doing it because at least you can kind of watch it happen and see what the results are. But yeah, you know, AI medicine and all of that stuff, we are going to surely go through a period of time where hopefully lots of diseases are going to, get sort of solved or find cures or have massive progress because of AI and these sorts of things. It's a conversation for not for 2 minutes, but yeah, that is going to be a theme for future, no doubt. Next one, if you live in a city, you'll probably get in a self-driving car next year. This is already happening in San Francisco. They've rolled out various self-driving taxi services. So yeah, it's probably going to come to a city near you if you want to get in that car. Don't be the first one in the city in it, but maybe check it out.
Yeah, if you go to San Francisco, yeah, maybe. I don't know about this. I think there's a lot of things that will stop a lot of municipalities from adopting it. Like Waymo is just a really problematic company, which is not something we need to get into right now. But yeah, I don't think so. I think 2026, yes. 2024, no.
Fair enough. That's good to push back. I mean, longer term, it is going to be interesting. Like, I wonder whether kids born today will probably never learn to drive because they're going to get to 17 and probably it's going to be safer by that point to not let humans drive. That's going to be a thing, however long it takes.
Jetpacks.
Yeah, and we'll have jetpacks.
Just personal jetpack. Yeah, totally. You'll be able to power outrage. Just channel the outrage on Twitter and turn it into propulsion.
Yeah.
Imagine that. That would be a fantastic use of the internet, just to turn outrage into thrust.
Engagement and outrage.
If anyone's listening, I am accepting offers of investment right now. So please hit me up.
Yeah, it's a new resource, a new finite resource, rage.
Yeah, this is a $1 billion idea, right? That's a $100 billion idea right there. Yeah.
Absolutely. The robots are coming. A broad prediction. Yes. But I mean, they are. Tesla bot. There was some news recently demonstrating it holding an egg delicately and doing various things with it. Fondling an egg, if you like.
That's the new Turing test. It's the new Turing test for robotics. Hold an egg delicately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool to watch. Robotics are nothing new. And we've seen slowly like the Amazon deliveries and things going down the street. And again, like in Hong Kong, first thing when I got off the plane was there was a robot cleaning the airport. Then went to a restaurant and there was a robot that came to take my tray away from me that was smiling very happily. This is a trend that we've seen for many years, but it is picking up pace for sure. Robot hoovers, robot lawnmowers. It's nice to see friends, have those kind of things more and more. They've been around for a little while, but yeah, it's definitely a trend. It's like sort of the next phase of AI is going to get there, isn't it? And going to be embedded into these physical machines. Anything to add there?
Brett Adcock.
Go on.
That's it.
Who's he?
He's an American technology entrepreneur and the founder and CEO of Figure, an AI startup. I'm just reading off Wikipedia here. I don't know if you can tell. the Figure is interesting because it's not Tesla, it's not Google, it's not Amazon, it's not one of these big companies that you've sort of ever heard of, but they have a humanoid robot that he has been building. That's a very interesting guy. He came from Archer Aviation and then moved into Vettery, which was, I forget, it was a recruiting company, and then Archer, the aviation company, and then he's moved into humanoid robots and obviously looking to tackle literally just shipping, logistics, warehouses, that kind of thing, moving boxes from one place to another. And these things look creepily like the creepiest humanoid robots you would possibly imagine, but probably a giant company with a giant future. Yeah, the robots are definitely coming.
Yeah, I've read some stuff on like their artificial skeletal muscle systems and stuff, which is going to mean they'll be able to lift things far heavier than humans ever could and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, it's going to be interesting and weird for sure.
So all those boxes that you lift at the weekends, just to
I'm
flex.
Always doing manual loads of manual labor. Yeah, absolutely. Always. Yeah. So get involved, robots. Nice. Okay, that was my immediate thoughts for sort of emerging technology things. Let's go on to crypto quickly because it's all part of the same future, whether you sort of like it or hate it or whatever. Here's some stuff to be aware of that's happening. The big one is the Bitcoin spot ETF approval. We won't go into what that means, but it sort of at least opens the floodgates for traditional finance if they want to put an allocation into Bitcoin. It makes it a lot easier and a lot safer from their point of view. I mean, a lot of people, and it always worries me when everybody thinks it's going to get approved, but there's been various weird things happening, like Google changed their ad policies to allow crypto funds to be advertised across Google randomly the other day, which seems quite a coincidence that maybe they're doing that ahead of the ETF approvals. And general conversation seems to be very positive. BlackRock leading the charge. And we'll see what happens to the markets after that. It is a massive moment for a lot of reasons we probably won't go into right now, but it's been a long time coming. What happens to the market after that? Who knows? Probably a big pump and then a big retrace as we often see, but who knows? It's something to look out for. It's something that will make mainstream news definitely if it gets approved. What do you think?
I've been covering ETFs for what seems like forever. For most people, they won't give a shit. It really doesn't mean anything to them. It's more like if you're in charge of a massive endowment, if you are the firefighters fund and you can gain some safe and properly regulated exposure to Bitcoin, then why not? I think what's interesting here is that there is, for the first time in a Bitcoin cycle that I can remember, a real feeling that the narrative has changed. I'm not suggesting that this time it's different, because I don't think that's ever the case. But in the previous cycles, we were kind of on this post-2008 housing crash bull run that was very safe and pampy for tech stocks and that kind of thing. And there's this feeling now that that's not where we are, and that there's a kind of existential threat for the US dollar's hegemony throughout the world, and that there is something stirring in the world order that might need paying attention to. And it hinges around the US's national debt, which is just terrifyingly large and cannot be brought back, it seems, because you can't just keep printing more money and expect that to be fine, because as we know, that just puts inflation completely out of control. And then they have to do this interest rate dance, and then everyone gets screwed, and it's no good for anybody. I think there's a reckoning coming for the US dollar. I don't know when that happens, but if there was ever a moment for an alternative currency, decentralized currency, to have its moment in the sun, this is it. So I expect there to be a lot of hand-wringing and public discourse around the validity of Bitcoin and the fact that it's only used by criminals and money launderers, because we're all criminals and we are all money launderers in the eyes of Elizabeth Warren. So I don't know. It's just part of the cycle. You start to see hedge fund managers and large respected figures in Wall Street start to signal that they're taking a position in Bitcoin. It's nothing to do with their support or otherwise for it as a technology. It's just they can make money.
Yeah, there's lots going on there, isn't there? And there's lots of different narratives that get pushed into the mainstream, rightly or wrongly. But yeah, it will get pretty interesting. Something like 73% of all Bitcoin hasn't been moved in the last year. The one really interesting thing is this cycle, the amount of liquid Bitcoin that's available to buy is much, much smaller than ever before, because most of it has been mined now. So you've got this small supply, and that will change as the price or whatever goes up, because people will sell at some point. But there's a few things that are very, very interesting about it. But anyway, we'll watch and see.
Yeah, well, that's also, to be fair, like, I think 2017's bull run was really catalyzed by some proper technological shifts or upgrades or improvements in Bitcoin with SegWit. And we didn't really see that in 2021. It was more fueled by ZERP, really. Just there being a lot of zero interest rate capital flying around. Whereas this time around, there has been a technological upgrade to Bitcoin, which I don't think the maxis were very happy about, which was ordinals and BRC20. And it seemed, I was just looking in the mempool this morning, because that's what I like to do sometimes. I just like to go and look at the mempool and see.
The water's lovely and warm.
How's my mempool doing today? I hadn't looked at the mempool and Bitcoin for like 4 years. And I looked at it and was like, it's completely clogged up. The Bitcoin network is just not set up to handle this at all. And it's interesting because the narrative in 2017 was about ETH killers. It was about alternative layer ones. It was about high speed, high volume networks that could handle the kind of, I mean, Stripe was always held up as a comparison. And I think we're going to see a lot of narrative around those again, that there will be a new renewed appetite for high speed networks and some interest in those. That's just my gut feeling. You have Solana on the docket a little bit later on. I think we should definitely talk about that. But yes.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. We'll power through for without going too deep into Bitcoin. But yeah, Web3 gaming is something we've talked about a lot. And it seems very clear that is becoming a major narrative. I'd actually argue that it's one of the biggest use cases of all for crypto. Again, not to go too deep, but blockchain really does one thing well, which is prove ownership of stuff. So financial markets, it's very helpful and useful for those, for that world. You could argue in art as well, and digital art and proving scarcity is useful. In video games is a massive use case for it, of trading skins and everything that's already happening, but being able to prove that. We won't go into that conversation, but I do think it's kind of an inevitable thing that will happen. We'll see how it plays out. It's going to be very volatile, of course, but I do think that is going to be a big trend, and we'll probably see some headlines of like a kid paying for their parents' car or mortgage or something by playing a blockchain game, and some mainstream media completely losing their mind over it. That type of thing's probably going to happen, I think. And I think everyone will underestimate, again, the adoption in Asia. And we'll see some sort of extreme FOMO. The Axie Infinity stuff was really interesting last cycle. And, you know, a lot of this podcast, us and people listening are based in the Western world. And it's very easy just to stay in your bubble. But yeah, so I think it's going to be a big trend. We'll see. There'll be a lot of nonsense, no doubt. There'll be a lot of games that are pushed that are not very good. And the incentives are wrong. But we've talked about it a bit before. But I think it's a massive use case for crypto. And we will see some really interesting stuff happen over the next 24 months. Anything to add there?
So my feeling on this is that there's been a lot of hand-wringing around Web3 gaming. And I think quite a lot of Web3 games sort of backed away and lost their bottle in terms of Web3. And you can see some of them sort of starting to climb back into it and say, oh, actually, by the way, we are Web3. We're still like, I think if you put your head over the parapet in the gaming world, you got to be prepared to take a few shots, whether you like it or not. And as you rightly said, blockchain, Web3, gaming does make a lot of sense. When you've got an economy and you need proof of ownership and all the sort of mechanics that can be deployed around that, they're great. But the only problem is, like, how do you mitigate speculation? I don't think anybody has an answer to that. And it's going to happen whether you like it or not. And that's kind of just is what it is. It is what it is. And it's not like it doesn't exist in, you know, the world of skins and everything else as well. But I think what we'll probably end up seeing is that it won't be Web3 gaming anymore. It'll just be gaming. I'm looking at projects like Shrapnel, Wilder World, myself, in terms of people that we can work with. And you got some really, like, pretty nice looking games here with some good communities that have a chance of, you know, gaining a player base and building a community around it. So I'm excited to see where it goes. And I'm also not scared to put my head above the parapet and say, yeah, we're for this. But for a lot of this year, it was just like, how much can we say or should we say around this? And the worry I have always is that there's this boom bust cycle that makes it very, very difficult to project a long-term business. And so you need to have a plan for, you know, when crypto is not the driving, or speculation is not the driving factor behind the value circulating through your system, and that the gaming has to stand on its own. And if, you know, people can create a game that people actually want to play, then I think they'll do great.
Yeah, I think that's all very true. There is some good stuff going on for sure. Yeah, and if you can get those economies right, we're beginning to see some different models that are not just speculation based, because people have seen that. But yeah, it's going to definitely get interesting, I think. Next prediction, the Solana ecosystem. I mean, it is stealing a lot of the attention at the moment. A few reasons for that. We won't, again, go in too deep, but, you know, they've come through a cycle where they got tested quite a lot. There is something called Fire Dancer coming, which is very boring for a lot of people, but it's means it's going to be sort of 20x faster than any other blockchain, which, if that's what you're going for, then that maybe means you know, more games will be built on it, maybe sort of lightning fast trading stuff will happen on Solana. But it's, yeah, I mean, a lot of this is just looking for a narrative of the next cycle. A lot of the meme coins, stupid as they are, have gone crazy on Solana. Weirdly, the Solana phone, which they released 10,000 physical phones, which they made, are all selling out, probably will have sold out by the time you listen to this, because everybody who got one of the phones got some of Bonk, the meme coin, which sounds ridiculous, and is you could claim from the phone, which is currently worth more than the phone. So people have ordered the phone to claim the airdrop, and the phone's essentially free, which could only happen in crypto. We'll see where that all goes. But yeah, also Dogenals have 10x'd since we last spoke. Not all of them, but
tell me. Or do you want to tell me? Because I mocked you roundly for the Dogenals.
Well, Dogenals, for anyone who is about to stop listening to this podcast because they've suddenly thought it's completely stupid, like you on Bitcoin, we've seen ordinals, specific sats and inscriptions. Well, I can't bother to explain really now, but Dogenals doing a similar thing, and there are tokens on Doge, or shitcoins on a shitcoin in many ways. So I would absolutely not recommend getting into them. But as a purely speculative thing, I do think as money comes back into the ecosystem, people tend to take more risk, and so silly things like this fly for a bit. Ask me again in 6 months and it might be the complete opposite.
Bonk.
Yeah.
Bonk.
And these silly things, what? We should move on from meme coins, because fun as they are, and yeah, they are part of internet culture and ridiculous, but they are, you know, risky as anything. I do think as well, in the crypto phase, we'll move on to AI stuff in a minute, but I do think a handful of the top NFT collections will see new volume, which is going to really annoy everyone who hates NFTs. Probably based on evidence that they've also got a game coming now soon. I think something like that will happen. I do think the your NFTs are now completely worthless article that went around probably marks the exact bottom of the market, which tends to be the case when something reaches the mainstream and goes into public consciousness. It's either usually the top or the bottom. So yeah, NFTs are a technology. And so as we see Web3 gaming grow, that technology you know, is not going anywhere, but we'll see it in a slightly different form. So I do think that will happen, that markets tend to humble you slash give you maximum pain. So yeah, I think we'll see some of those come back. Many of them won't. On that point, I think,
well, you've said, I'm gonna push by here. So you say a handful of the top NFT projects will see new volume. I think quite a lot of NFT projects will see new volume. What tends to happen is a new narrative is born. During this last 6 months or so, a new hero has emerged. His name is Luca Netz. He is the owner of the Pudgy Penguins project. Pudgy Penguins has stolen everyone's hearts by showing that there is a way to connect Web 2 or traditional to Web 3 in a very lightweight and some might say sneaky way. But the Pudgies are doing really well, and Luca's clearly a very savvy operator when it comes to all of this, and is showing a different way to, for instance, Yuga with all their cash and all their other side and all these other things. I think basically the new narrative around NFTs will be about royalties. Yeah, I know. Because royalties basically got killed. And if there was one thing that I felt was a narrative that we could stand behind that made sense, that was actually worth defending, despite all the speculation, it was the royalties. The sense that you could create something and in perpetuity, those royalties could be respected and returned to the creator or the earner based on the success of the project. That all went away because they were unenforceable. However, there is a new smart contract out. I mean, it's new. It's not that new. It's the ERC-721-C. I've been taking a very close look at this because it is a contract that enforces royalties at the smart contract level, which means that you can't bypass it through a marketplace. And what it also does is it allows you to create very detailed and specific logic in and around how those royalties are transferred. So for instance, if you wanted to migrate to this contract and reward people who minted that NFT at the very beginning and have held on to it, you could enforce a piece of logic that said every royalty that is paid, yeah, 5% of that goes back to you as a diamond hand, all these kind of things. And there's other ways that you can do it. You can split royalties, all sorts of different things. Really interesting. And I think what we're going to see is Yuga launching a new marketplace with Magic Eden and creating a new interest or a new mechanic around royalties. And I think the big projects will move to those royalties. We'll start to see a lot more aligned incentives around what the projects do to generate trading volume and how that trading volume then creates revenue models and revenue streams for NFT projects. Because without royalties, it's very, very difficult for projects to survive because there's just, it's so very, very difficult to build a business around NFTs at the moment. So that's my prediction.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting one for sure. Like you say, something you can really stand behind, like nobody would disagree with. If you're a digital creator and you create something cool and get royalties in perpetuity, that is a great thing that doesn't previously exist. So if we can get that happening, that would be a cool moment for sure. My next point on that is, you know, NFTs are a technology, using blockchain. I think we'll keep seeing it get sort of hidden as the technology gets abstracted. So, you know, good example of this in the gaming world, a company called Mythical Games. John Linden is the CEO, who previously was a studio head at Activision Blizzard's on the Call of Duty franchise. They have released a mobile game about 9 months ago, I think, which is an official partnership with the NFL called NFL Rivals. It's done 4 million downloads, and it's a great experience. You would have no idea as a player, and you don't need to know, and you just play the game. It's fun. You unlock cards as you go through the season and perform well and attend special events and stuff. And then many of those cards are tradable on an NFT marketplace. All you have to do is link your Mythical Games account. You can go onto the marketplace. You do it all in your regular fiat currency. And on the back end, it's all immediately switched to crypto and stored on a blockchain so you can prove ownership and if you want to take custody of those assets and those kind of things, that can happen. But it's a really smooth process and it's proven itself. It's got 4 million downloads. People love the game. So, but there's no mention of it there. And yeah, I think there'll be two ecosystems that will develop, but it seems a cool way to go forward. So I think we'll see more of that. Most people probably won't need to know or care about any of the technology underneath stuff. That's usually how things play out. I do think as well, my sort of final prediction on crypto is that I do think, and again, obviously no financial advice here, but these, as you know, risk assets, I think it at some point gets even more insane than the last cycle. Sadly, as we talked about sort of the US dollar generally, and we won't go into a massive conversation here, but like as big currencies begin to die, which is what is happening with the US in $34 trillion worth of debt, and it'll take time to play out, blah, blah, blah. But if, you know, if you go through history, some of the symptoms of that is that people feel forced, you know, like usually the middle class gets a bit hollowed out. If you've got assets, you own lots of property or you own new digital assets or whatever, you benefit from the inflation that comes, or at least you maintain your wealth. If you don't have any assets, then sadly you become poorer as money gets inflated, and you feel generally, at least what's happened in history, is people feel forced to take bigger risks just to keep up with everything that's happening. And so I do think we'll see that in the markets, which is not a good thing. It's just sort of a product of that, I think. I wonder whether that will lead to sort of people talking about gamble fire and stuff, which I don't think is a good thing at all, but just witnessing what's happening, maybe we'll go there. So much caution there. But I do kind of think, sadly, we are going to see more risk-taking and more crazy speculation as well. So I think at least it's good to be aware of that. But hey, maybe I'm wrong.
Just keep an eye on TikTok. What's happening on TikTok? What are people saying, and what are teenagers telling each other about finance? There was just a sickening deluge of dim-witted finfluencers spouting garbage on TikTok when I was covering DeFi, talking about DeFi tokens, talking about crypto. No clue. No clue whatsoever. And yet these sort of shiny, frothy little poppets become popular. What they say gets, you know, pushed around, and like, it's just nuts. I mean, without stimulus checks, maybe that won't happen, but I can't help feeling that there may come a point where the money printer gets turned back on, because I don't know how, if you're the Fed, I don't know how you get out of this.
It is a debt spiral. It's the beginnings of it, isn't it, really? But anyway, that's it's maybe a big negative for festive stuff, but at least something to be aware of, I think. So don't get caught up in the FOMO necessarily.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Yeah, all of the above.
Don't do crypto. Oh, I don't know.
Maybe don't. All right, some AI predictions or thoughts for next year as well. I think we'll see a lot of talk about couples either having problems or breaking up because one of them got caught having a relationship with an AI partner, which we've already seen certainly the early signs of that this year with things like Karen Marjorie, the influencer, who rented out her likeness that you could talk to. There's lots of Instagram models that are blowing up and celebs are getting caught DMing them, asking to take them on dates, but they don't actually exist. That's already happening.
Pink hair.
Yes, yeah.
She's got pink hair. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. It's like she doesn't even look that real.
Yeah.
But she's Spanish, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I do think it's gonna happen. And we've seen all the replica stuff as well. We have talked about that quite a lot on the show, the app that you can download, and that's very much like an avatar sort of game character that you can speak to, but is very human.
It's funny, I was talking to our manager, because we got a manager a few months ago, and we were just having a laugh. So I said to him, dude, you should basically just start an agency with AI influencers and not do real human beings. You just like make so much more money, and it's laughable, but it's also kind of true.
Yeah, people will make loads of money doing that, because especially for Instagram accounts, and as video gets better, like most influencers don't really ever do anything in person. Like you sort of post about your life, and also if you're an attractive model person, well then the reason most people are following you is for those things. So if you can generate that, then yeah, I mean, maybe it'll get overcooked and everyone will have seen all of it, but I don't know, it's the way humans go. And the argument with the couples is going to be, well, they don't exist, so how is this bad? And then the other person's going to be like, well, you're still, you know, talking and spending time with somebody who isn't me. That's all going to happen, isn't it? It's going to be an absolute nightmare. probably people will start doing bits with robots as well. I imagine that'll happen at some point. Just it's human nature, kind of. Next one. Obviously, there's a US election next year. And AI has proven already that I don't know whether this I've written down the US election will be a shit show, but I'm not sure it will, because everybody is so expecting to see AI videos of, you know, potential presidential candidates and stuff. I think people will be so aware of it, and I think people are beginning to look at media a bit and go, is that real? But maybe that's just because we're in a sort of techie bubble. We sort of have that filter, but I don't know what to think about this. But even so, if people are making silly videos, even if you know they're fake, sometimes the damage can be done, or the kind of, you know, memes spread faster than any official messages. And I wonder whether some presidential candidate will probably make a deliberate AI-created video to try and jump on a trend, and it'll be really cringe and awful. Not sure. What do you think about that coming?
I don't know. Is the honest answer? I feel like there's been a erosion of mainstream media to the point where it no longer matters. So where is the conversation going? And like I sort of got fascinated by Tucker Carlson and how he's taken his voice, his ideas, his way of doing things to X. And I kind of assumed that it wouldn't work on X, but the exact opposite. He is every bit as successful as he was previously. And now he has no one to tell him he can't say stuff. And it feels like more and more we're going to see, you know, these messages, these things play out on Twitter. It's not like it didn't already, but like it really will. You know, this guy's getting 7-8 million views per video. 10, I'm looking at the last one, 10, 11, 12. I mean, Jesus, it works. Absolutely works.
Yeah, I do think that's probably another big prediction, is that X begins to become a far more dominant video media platform. I mean,
yeah, it goes, it's like left politics, right politics. Like left want to abandon it, and the right want to adopt it because it's the last bastion of free speech. It's very strange. From our side, one of the weirdest kind of awakenings I had in the last 3-4 months was that YouTube is not my platform. And that as much as we've been trying to kind of build on YouTube, and we will continue to do so, it's not where the growth is. It's not where I'm excited to do things. Twitter is. I didn't expect that. Not at all.
Same. And the interesting thing is, if you're starting out as well, like it's far easier to grow on Twitter because you can make a video, put it out there, and then actually post that video under other big accounts that are related to you and get eyeballs actively. Whereas on YouTube, you sort of post it and then you sit there and you can't do anything to grow it except post it on other social medias that generally they don't like you linking out. So it's like Twitter is a far more like active social media, really, where you can really get your stuff seen with a bit of effort.
Yeah, it's the conversation happens around what you've made. And if you do it in the right way, and if you hook it then into spaces and more of a conversation, and we're going to look at live streaming on Twitter as well. I mean, on so many levels, it's crap. But at the same time, I'm excited about it. I see interesting things going on. I see interesting connections being made, and they can be directly related to the products that we make. And they can also gather up the sort of three weird different audiences that we now understand that we speak to. And TikTok is the other one. I'm not ready for TikTok, but I know we have to go there. And
yeah.
God damn it. But yeah, TikTok. AI TikTok's going to be like just horrific.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Also, Elon Musk has made it very clear that X is going to become a payments platform as well. So that's when that gets integrated and people are getting subscription revenue, which is starting to happen already. Like it's going to get, yeah, that will be a prediction for sure.
What did you make of him on stage calling out Disney?
I don't know. I swing between like liking and hating it, but I thought it was fine. Like, at least there's somebody like that, I think, that just sort of calls out bullshit for the sake of it. And yeah, like I did laugh. Like, I don't know. I mean, if you're a marketer, like, yeah, there's problems and he's not really answering any of the questions. But also, that's what that platform is. At least you're stepping out of like what everything else is, you know?
It's a weird reset, but I think that's why I like it. It feels like it's there's energy there and there's things stirring. And like, I do like YouTube. I do think there's genuinely, for the right kind of person who makes the right kind of content, there is a business to be built there. But my feeling is that, you know, like so much of how we search for stuff now is like look for the YouTube video, like the help stuff, the tutorials, that kind of thing. AI can now scrape YouTube videos, and like Bard, I think, can scrape YouTube videos and serve up the information for you. I think that's quite problematic, because if you don't have to watch the video doesn't generate any ad revenue. So there's no business to be made creating that kind of content. Kind of strange, right?
Yeah, well, it might be the beginnings of the end of SEO, really, isn't it? Because I've found that's my habit. It's like, if I want to know something, I don't want to scroll through pages. I'll just ask ChatGPT and it'll do that and give you the answer. It's, yeah, I do think that is a big shift that's coming. Okay, we've got a few more to rattle through. I think we'll probably move from a sort of from generative AI, it's going to carry on, obviously, but more to action AI. We talked about this concept in an episode with Edward Saatchi from Fable and the simulation stuff, which is really interesting. But we've already seen people like Demo AI that can take over their computer, which I'd never let it do mine, and complete tasks for them because it's multimodal, so it can sort of understand the visuals and do stuff. And also, we've seen evidence of AI agents being able to send crypto payments to each other. Like, crypto is going to be the currency of AI and the internet. And for sort of small tasks and things like that, that feels like become a big trend as well.
No, it's going to appear like it's a big trend, because you're going to see all the AI influencers talking about what it can do. I think there is a similar problem to self-driving cars here, which is you have a massive barrier of trust to get over. I already have it in terms of ChatGPT. I just don't trust what it tells me. And I still find that I need to go and do fact checking, and I need to go and do the research. So every time I try and trust ChatGPT to serve me up research for something I want to write, I fundamentally don't trust it. I don't believe it. So I end up doing the research myself. And that's because I don't want to be saying stuff publicly and risking my own reputation based on things that I haven't researched myself. It feels like it's secondhand, it's cliff notes, and I don't like that. And I think there's a similar kind of issue with trusting an agent to handle financial transactions or book stuff for you. There's so much that's unseen. I don't know if it's going to be a thing just yet. I have a suspicion, though, that far from it being a consumer technology that gets adopted, it's far more likely that it'll be a business technology that gets adopted, and a lot of processes happening in the background at businesses will be automated in that way. I don't think we as consumers will want to hand that over, but it may well be that you sign up for a service and it uses that in the background, like banking might do it, or concierge services might do it. I don't know. I just don't think it's something as a B2C thing that makes any sense at this point.
That's fair. Yeah, for sure. My next prediction, we are rattling through about five more. So I think voice first AI companions will become pretty standard. We'll see like the humanization of AI a lot more. It's text-based at the moment, and I do think we'll start to see that become personified, if you like, where we'll have more, you know, human-like assistance in some form. You know, we've seen the conversations where you can turn on the experimental feature if you have ChatGPT Pro on the app, and you can speak, and the voice is more human coming back, and people have had really quite in-depth conversations. I think that will undoubtedly become a big part of the future. It's going to feel more human, I think, and that kind of plays into the people having relationships with AI, you know, partners and stuff like that. I think that's a trend that will inevitably happen. Apple will probably release something, a local large language model or similar, in their iPhone 16 model next year. They've sort of sat back on most stuff at the moment, but no doubt they will make some amazing consumer AI thing as part of their iPhone 16. I think that seems most people would probably agree on that. Early game development will get more democratized with the help of AI 3D creation tools. So this is something that we've seen Roblox talk about for kind of environment generation. And we've seen the very early sort of beta test AI tools that can sort of do stuff in 3D. That might be a big sort of advancement, I think, next year. And therefore, like we've talked about gaming being the dominant culture, we've said before as well, you know, YouTube made it easier for people to make videos. Whether they'll be good or not is another question, but AI creating 3D environments, I think that's where game creation, you know, goes up a gear, makes it a lot easier if it's going to become is the dominant culture. But for UGC and if everybody's going to play in this field, then creating a game is way more complex. So AI, if it begins to help with that, I think will only fuel that move into the gaming world as the sort of dominant media category.
Yeah, there are some implications to all of this, which is if content creation, particularly 3D content creation, becomes so democratized and so easy to do, then everybody can do it, and therefore you end up in a battle for eyeballs. And what's interesting here is to look at the way YouTube kind of became a platform for micro niches that blew up. So you would never have thought that a gardening channel would blow up to be as big as some of them have done. You would never have thought that a man with a beard who eats food could blow up to be such a phenomenon. So these micro niches, I think probably see something replicated on game platforms. And it's probably going to be quite sort of weird to see all of that, because you know, you've got single developers who are able to do quite a lot by themselves, and they, if they stick at it, will build a kind of small and loyal, devoted fan base. But they'll have to stick at it for quite a long time to make it really stick. The sort of Mr. Beast of Fortnite or the Mr. Beast of Roblox hasn't really appeared yet, but I have a feeling it kind of could. Obviously, I talk about ourselves in all this because what we're trying to do with building in Fortnite, creating IP, delivering value into that IP and having a product strategy around it, plus being able to film in our own worlds as if we're there, that all sort of ties this thing together. I mean, it's all about eyeballs. It's all about attention. It's all about player liquidity. So it's fine, make a game, but talk to anyone who's making games on Fortnite right now. They can make games really easily. The thing they cannot do is get anyone to play them. So discovery is the thing that I think no one's talking about enough, and AI should do a better job of. The more shit there is, the harder it is to find the gems. And that's just plain simple truth.
I think that's very true. And when you look at the whole sort of media landscape, okay, game creation becoming easier for the average person, that's a big assumption, but you know, it's beginning to happen. Still, it doesn't destroy everything that has come before it. Like, people with big YouTube followings or big social media followings are the people who can push people towards the game that they've made. So it's not like none of these categories get replaced, but I think just the market share shifts. And I think, you know, we'll also see next year that share get taken away even more from linear TV and radio, as people, the main people who are watching those sorts of things are the people who built those habits when they were younger and are now, you know, much older and won't probably never, you know, play in game worlds and stuff because they just sort of don't care. But yeah, as time goes on, it just, the categories shift and the attention moves. And it's worth it. I think those, you know, linear TV and radio and stuff are only going to lose market share as this all shifts, but none of it will get completely destroyed for many years. You know, I think that's generally how things play out. I think we'll see a wave of games that continually generate content forever using AI as well. They probably won't be very good at first, but that feels like a thing. As these environments are able to be generated, there will be a category of new games that the content is always new. And there's one called Big Time, which is a Web3 game where, at least as you go on kind of dungeon crawlers and stuff, every time you go into it, it's different. And I don't think they're hugely, you know, completely revolutionary different, but it's this cool sort of feature. I think that will become a sort of category of games. And
yeah, Parallel Alpha, which was a trading card game, they've gone into AI and using AI to transform the gameplay. They always had incredible art on those cards. They were really just a sick collection. And I'm curious to see where that one's going to go, because there are certain formats where being AI powered makes a lot of sense.
Final predictions then. This is a slightly wild one, but I think we will see humans begin to work for predominantly AI companies. Maybe that needs defining more, but sort of interesting example, which again is a bit of a way off, but there is this Channel One News video that went viral recently, which is a company that is just pumping out 24/7 news with human reporters. That's all being generated consistently. And you know, some humans have put that together, but essentially we're beginning to work for sort of companies that are predominantly made by AI. So yeah, that's worth looking at. I'll link it below if you haven't seen it. It went quite viral this week, but yeah, it's pretty wild, which I think will lead, not to be negative, but there will be more wide-scale protests against AI. We saw it with the writer strike and stuff this year. That will be the first of many industries, no doubt, in the future. That's just how things happen, isn't it? But yeah, we'll see. And one that you add as well, we'll maybe see the first sort of mainstream Western virtual character. We've talked about this before, and there are a few that are already quite huge. Teflon Sega being one, and getting millions of views on TikTok. Yeah, completely virtual character. And yeah, you're putting out Metaplex, which has your virtual character and stuff. I think the time is coming where people will relate to these characters more. They can do more cool and interesting things, and we will see sort of a wave of virtual characters for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Teflon Sega has been around for a while, but it was really interesting when you pointed out that how he's really blown up on TikTok, and by sort of reducing down to just doing his thing, but with the meme of the day or these kind of things. And it's, yeah, I feel like in the West, we're very much lagging behind Asia, where you've got lots of VTubers and, you know, virtual characters who are very credible and very likable and very entertaining. And like, I made a commitment at the end of this year that we were going to go full GEPP. That's what I call it. Game engine powered production. So taking all the skills, all the cameras, all the lights, all the stuff that I know how to use, and reducing it to a bit part in the greater kind of scheme of things, and just going full virtual with everything. It's terrifying, but it's also, I know that's where the opportunity is. And I also know that when I get up in the morning, that's what I'm excited about. That's the bit that I'm excited to get in front of the world and keep developing and keep working on. And that's also because I know that we're so far ahead of most people, and we're so early to this. That's crazy. I think the global influencer marketing market value in 2022 was $16.4 billion. I wonder what that will be like, or what that'll be worth in 2025. I think it's going to explode. I really do.
Yeah, especially as you see the digital economy, you know, whether it's NFTs or whether it's specific skins in games and stuff, you know, natively digital things like that can just transfer hands so fast and be created, you know, and bought anywhere around the world without physically shipping anything. Like the, I said for a long time, the sort of digital GDP at some point will begin to rival physical products, because it's just the scale of it is insane. And yeah, the virtual influencers will make a lot of sense because they'll be able to demonstrate their virtual skins, whereas you can't put a human influencer showing you what a Fortnite skin looks like on them, you know. But yeah, like we say, it's not going to replace everything, but it's going to be a big trend, I think, going forward. And you know, a lot of these virtual characters are driven by humans anyway, but it just opens up what's possible and what you can do in entertainment and fun and cool gaming culture. So yeah, I think that's probably a good place to finish. A lot of predictions in there. I don't know what percentage we'll get right, but it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, this is, it's 2023 hasn't been a crazy year. When did ChatGPT come out? Like
end of 2022. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, just look at that. It's absolutely wild, isn't it? A year from now, who knows? But it's going to be a crazy year for sure.
Oh my gosh.
I think that's probably the pod.
I think that is the pod. What a year it's been.
Peace.